T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
C is for Cubby.
Middays on the Score.
It was for Cubbies and Cookie yesterday, as Cookie Monster, the monster, was awesome. There to sing the stretch. An entire stadium captivated by the presence of Cookie Monster, and the press box just jumping all over each other to get pictures.
It's one of the biggest celebrities.
Get some cookies!
If you look at just pure recognition, Q rating for Cookie Monster.
International fame.
International, any age group. It cuts across all kinds of lines. Cookie Monster is probably the biggest guy to sing the stretch at Wrigley Field.
I probably don't think that's in question.
That's what I'm telling you.
I mean, Michael Jordan has done it, right?
That's okay. So you gotta. That's one.
Right. I mean, that's
tough to compete against Michael Jordan. Kind of forgot he did
that.
That's
kind of big international brand.
Kind of forgot he did that. That's on me.
Has he? Has Michael Jordan sung the
stretch? You're telling me. I thought you were saying Michael Jordan has sung the stretch.
I assumed he has, but maybe that's wrong.
Well,
I don't
know. You know what happens when you assume? We replay Jed Hoyer.
Oh, yes. I knew that. Yes, because Jed Hoyer had a great deal to say about his team and just figuring out where they are and what still needs work.
I mean, that's the question. And I agree with you. I think that's actually a fairly good way to put it. I know I've said this on this show a bunch of times. Like, you know, to me, you know, when we're at our best, you know, certainly how we were at the end of 15, how we were in 16, how we were in the second half of 17, I feel like when we're at our best, we're tough to beat. And so, you know, it's baseball. You know, winning 2 out of 3 in a series is a good thing. But you felt like the nights that you lost when you went home, you felt like the other team beat you. They showed up. They got the big hits. It didn't feel like we beat ourselves. It felt like they beat us. And I think that's, you know, that's sort of an important distinction, you know, because you're going to lose in baseball. You're going to go home disappointed. You know that. But you don't want to go home disappointed because you let opportunities get away. And like the last two nights, for example, it feels like we let opportunities to win games get away. We were kind of sloppy. It felt that way. Like, you know, the Friday game we lost against the Mets, for example, this felt like a game we let get away. And that's what's frustrating. So I think that's the tightening up you're talking about. We've got to make fewer outs on the bases. We've got to catch the ball better, take care of the ball better, not give up as many free runs. And then obviously we need to get some big hits. So in general, tightening is a good word. And I think that's where the frustration comes from, is that we haven't been very good at that the last 4 or 5 weeks.
So the defensive stuff is kind of easy to understand, the feeling that you guys might have with a need for tightening up. The offensive stuff matters too, though, I think, as you mentioned. How do you guys square the team's overall ground ball rate and its, you know, pretty good on base percentage and pretty good home run rate? Where do those all three of those things kind of mix together?
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult thing to figure in a lot of ways, right? Because, you know, we have hit a lot of homers. You know, we have five guys with 15 or more homers, and I think that, you know, we have driven the ball. I think we've used the opposite field this year as well as any team. You know, I think we've done a really good job with that. But, you know, our situational hitting is still been a source of frustration, and this is you know, sort of a broken record. You know, what year is this? It seems like every year but 16, we struggle with guys in scoring position, and it doesn't feel like we give our best at bats in those situations. And so that's just something we have to keep working at, keep getting better at. If I had a dollar for every hour I've spent, you know, thinking about, you know, our situational hitting, you know, it'd be, you know, I could help out the city a great deal. You know, it's just a frustrating thing about our team. We haven't excelled in those situations, and those are the situations that matter. You know, last night we couldn't get a hit the guy's scoring position, and we ended up losing that game. You know, one or two hits in those spots, we win last night. So we've got to get better at that. We've got to keep working, and we will. And that's really the gist of it, is that there's no magic formula to get better at hitting with guys in scoring position, but we do need to do a better job as a team, or we're not going to get where we want to go.
When you spend all that time thinking about it, what are you thinking about and how?
I think it's a lot of thinking about different players' behaviors, I guess I would say, in those situations. You know, what are we doing differently? Obviously, we have a team that on paper, if you take a really broad view of it, is a very good offensive team. You know, we have a lot of really good underlying numbers. Offensively, we've always been really good at getting on base. Though I would say that it's been a frustrating month from an on-base standpoint, and we do need to get back to sort of our normal standard, which is usually the one or two in the National League as far as getting on base. But in general, I think we do a lot of positive things offensively, but I do think we change some behaviors when we have guys on base, whether it's certain guys might chase more in those spots, certain guys might get more pull conscious, you know, certain guys, you know, may get more passive. And I think that's something you're constantly looking at, is, you know, the best, you know, clutch hitters that I've seen are able to, you know, really tighten their focus and tighten their strike zone and really, force the pitcher, force the pitcher to work in those spots. And I think sometimes we don't do that. So I think we have to organize our strike zone, as Joe would say, in those situations, and make it so we're not changing our behavior in a negative way when you get guys in scoring position.
So the Cubs general manager, Jed Hoyer, here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show, 670 The Score. Jed, if it is a case of you know, what year is it, and feeling like it's the same issues as you've had in the past, I know a lot of Cubs fans will ask the question, and I'll do the same. Is it time to start looking at players who do answer those questions a little bit differently? Is it, this offseason was one of import, and some really big things were said about your own evaluation of players. Are you guys at a point where you look at different solutions to some of the lineup spots?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, a valid question. I think that, I still would say, you know, that this is a group that's, you know, won more games than any team, really, you know, since we've been put together. So there's a lot of positives. There are some areas of frustration, like we just discussed. We haven't been very good in those situations. And, one thing that I do think that, we'll certainly look outside, you know, for answers. I think that whether we find those answers is a question. I think that, you know, the trade market can be tough, and we're not going to make change for change's sake. But, you know, this is a an offense that probably doesn't have quite the depth that it has. You know, I think that, you know, obviously we would certainly miss Zoe's presence, his quality at bats and his on-base skills. And, I think we have to, we wouldn't be doing our job to not do our due diligence, to not think about those things externally, whether they happen or not. I'm not sure. And that said, I don't think that's I don't think that says that we don't have confidence in our guys. I think it says, like, you know, that's our job, is to think about everything we can. And if an external move makes sense to jumpstart the offense, maybe we'll do that.
Are you optimistic that Zobrist will return?
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way I have. We certainly hope he does. That's ultimately on him, but we are hopeful. And, I think that in a lot of ways, some of the struggles we've had, I think you can, it helps you appreciate, the mature at bat he brings to the lineup. He does get on base. He grinds at bats. He studies pitchers. And, I think we certainly miss that. There's no doubt. But the most important thing at this point is that he and his family are in a good place. And like I said, we're hopeful that he can, work through all those issues. And obviously we'd love to have him back.
Jed, I want to get an update on the rotation. Tommy Hotovy was on the station just a day or two ago looking at ways to get days, an extra day or two for guys in that rotation. Kyle Hendricks has, according to our own Bruce Levine, thrown a 30-pitch side yesterday. Another coming up Saturday, it sounds like. Is there a timetable for Kyle yet, and how do you guys feel about spacing the rotation out for a day or two for a member of that rotation?
Yeah, there's no perfect timetable yet. But yeah, his bullpen went well. He has another one scheduled. And I think after that, we'll have a better sense of what it looks like. I think that, he's likely to need a rehab start. So I don't think that his return to the rotation is not imminent just because he's thrown some bullpens. I think we want to make sure that we treat him right and take a long view. And I think we've tried to do that, with the rotation over the last couple weeks. And, next week we have the off day Friday, which is odd. And then we have the 2-game series against the White Sox. And then we have the All-Star break. And like with every team, but certainly ours this year, I think it'll be welcome for us. We get the full 4-day off All-Star break this year. And we're trying to give the guys a little bit of a breather, heading into the All-Star break. And then hopefully with the All-Star break, we can come out with a refreshed rotation. And hopefully Kyle is back and ready at that point.
How's C.J. Edwards?
He's doing well. He also threw a bullpen yesterday, and he's doing well. And it's similar to Kyle. I don't think we're ready to make any announcements on him, but, we're certainly hopeful that, sometime around the All-Star break, whether before or after, he should be back if things keep progressing. Our goal, obviously we're adding Kimbrel today. Hopefully we can get CJ back soon. And, I think we can turn the bullpen into real strength if guys are hitting on all cylinders. And that's obviously that was the goal.
Is there an integration plan for Kimbrel, or is he just full go anywhere Jed wants to, or anywhere Joe wants to throw him in there, you're able to do it? Or I guess if you wanted to throw him in there too, you could be doing it.
That's a really good question. And I think that's, the conversation we'll have with Craig. He certainly, he threw a back-to-back last week. I think he's certainly ready to go. But I think at the same time, there probably is a little bit of a continued ramp up with him. And it's also difficult, and this will be part of the conversation that, a guy like him has been closing the big leagues for a long time. I think we all know that closers are, kind of driven by adrenaline. You're not going to get their best stuff, their best focus, in a non-safe situation. So that's something we'll be aware of also as we think about, how to kind of ramp him up and integrate him with the team.
What does Robel Garcia have to do to get his shot with the big club?
He's been, really, really good this year and a great, great story and a great job by our pro scouting department finding, finding him. There's no question. We're watching carefully, and hopefully he continues to play well and hit well. And I guess that's probably what I would say is that we're certainly paying attention, and we love what he's doing, and he's been a great teammate. So hopefully this continues.
And Carlos Gonzalez is in the starting lineup today as they're loading up with lefties here in getaway day. How much longer do you give this? Obviously, this was a low-risk flyer on a proven veteran to see the phrase that Theo used to see if he can get on one of his epic tears.
Yeah.
And hasn't yet. And at some point, you got to decide that it isn't going to happen. How long do you give this?
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid question. He's one of the streakiest guys in the game. Yeah, as Steve alluded to, when he gets on one of his runs, he can carry an offense. And you know, obviously he's not, you know, in his 20s anymore. He's not, you know, kind of where he was with the Rockies. But, you know, certainly, you know, we do believe there's a lot more good baseball in there. But, yeah, I mean, I think that we have, you know, we kind of talked about the offense earlier and talked about, you know, how do we sort of get on a run? And I think that, you know, one of the things is, you know, we haven't sort of gotten the same production off our bench or out of all of our guys that we're used to. We have some guys struggling, you know, on the bench. Cargo is one of them, and that's something we have to look at. But, you know, he's an awesome teammate. He's been great in the clubhouse with our guys. He's working hard with Anthony Iposi. I mean, so he's doing all the right things, but it hasn't clicked yet, and, you know, we're hopeful that it will.
Jose Quintana's last little stretch has been, he's been hit around a little bit, if we're being honest. I wonder how much you guys look at pitch mix and some of the velocities dipping a little bit over his last few. Is a pitch mix issue going on with Quintana right now, or is it something different?
Yeah, you know, we actually had a meeting yesterday to go over a lot of our pitching stuff, the whole staff, and that was something we talked about. You know, as you can see, we gave him a little extra rest this time through. You know, we thought he'd been sort of grinding and going through, you know, taking his turn every time as he always does. And we thought, you know, maybe giving him a couple extra days off might be helpful. Yeah, there's some mechanical things that, he and Tommy Hotovy are working on. And yeah, he has been grinding. You know, he was really good early and he's had a dip here. Probably got into a couple bad habits that you don't realize. And I think one of the things with baseball in 2019 is that you're able to pinpoint those things a little bit earlier and hopefully you get ahead of them. And I think that we've done that. We've been kind of working with Q on some of those issues and hopefully he gets right back there, but he feels great physically. He just, you know, certain things have probably led to, you know, not having probably the same finish on his fastball. And, you know, that's something he relies on so much. Like when he's at his best, you know, he just beats barrels with his fastball, oftentimes up in the zone. When he gets in some bad habits, which we've seen, you know, a couple different small stretches over the last couple of years, when he gets in some bad habits, you know, he doesn't have quite that same finish. And that's when he can get hit around a bit. And that's kind of the lull we're in right now. But hopefully we're on top of it and hopefully he can get right back out of it and get back to the way he was throwing early in the season.
You talk about baseball in 2019, and when we sat down, Jed, in spring training down in Mesa, we were talking about the cameras, and you said over the last 2 years the game has changed immensely. Mm-hmm. Everybody involved with this show has just finished reading the book, The MVP Machine, by Ben Lindbergh and Travis Sawchuk. We wanted to make it a requirement for engaging in baseball discussion on this show, and we talked with Ben Lindbergh at length about it. I've got a much better understanding of what's going on. How much, when these things go on, when you start to think about solving problems and actually the granular solving of individual problems, how interested are you now in the imaging, in the data, in what you can actually do in real time with these new resources at your disposal within a season?
Yeah, it's really remarkable. I mean, I kind of alluded to that with Q, but you know, when a guy starts to struggle, and I would say this, you know, and not to put it on Q, every one of our starters is, you know, and we have a very good rotation and they're very accomplished guys. Every one of our guys has gone through this kind of lull at some point during the season. And we've ended up having very similar conversations, which are very different than we had 5 years ago. Whereas now we can really focus. You know, we have so many ways to, you know, whether it's the high speed cameras, whether it's other tools we have to focus on a pitcher's mechanics now that we never had before, we can really pinpoint exactly what a guy is doing differently. We can go back to stretches where they were really successful, and we have the ability to point these things out. And we never had that before, and I really think that it does allow us and other teams to get guys out of ruts quicker because you can get back to it. Before, you would have been staring at video and trying to overlay video in a way that was just much less precise, and now you can do that, you know, in a much more surgical way, and I think that's it's so valuable. So you know, I wouldn't focus on Q. I'd focus on all of our guys. Every one of our guys we've had that kind of meeting about, that kind of conversation, and it's really helpful. And one of the best parts of baseball in 2019 is you can now bring that stuff to that pitcher, and they're super receptive. They dig into it. You know, almost every time when you bring them that kind of information, they end up taking it. They end up looking at this, at stuff, and they start focusing on it. So there's no reluctance anymore to use technology. They encourage it, and I think they're excited by the fact that they think it can get them back on track quicker.
Jed, I'd hate myself if I didn't ask a question about Adbert Alzolay before we let you go. He's been so much fun to watch working into the bigs, and I've just kind of assumed, given his pitch counts, that he's going to have to be into the bullpen to stay with the big league club for a while. Is that the right assumption? Am I just being an idiot? Is it valuable maybe to have him get a couple more starts in AAA before this season ends? Where is the thinking on what's most important for him?
Yeah, and it's a conversation that we've been having ourselves, and you know, trying to figure out the exact way to use his innings and use his pitches the rest of the year. We're really excited about how he's thrown. He did a great job at Iowa. I think he's really, you know, comported himself well in the two outings, I guess, he's had, you know, here, you know, the first one against the Mets out of the bullpen, and then, you know, and then against the Braves on Tuesday night. I think he's thrown really well, and we're excited about it. But we also know, you know, we don't have a rotation spot up here that's open, and we also know that we're going to need him later in the year. So I don't know what that looks like, mix of starts, maybe mix of bullpen. I don't think we'd know yet, but it's certainly a conversation we're having. And I'm just excited to be having that conversation because it means he's opened everyone's eyes. It means he's forced his way into that conversation. And that's what we always talk about. Just, you know, his performance and in the way he's acted in the big leagues has sort of forced that conversation. And that's a great thing.
Jed, last question I have before we let you go. I want to go back and revisit some of the watchwords that were laid down by you and Theo and the top of the organization before this season about playing with urgency, about making sure that these games aren't given away, and importantly, the accountability for players for their performance and their production beyond who they are, where they were drafted, what they've won, what their pedigree might be. How should that inform the way I look at this team going forward this year and your approach to the deadline?
Well, I think that, you know, I think it's obvious, you know, just sort of based on our words and, you know, based on the fact that we, you know, went out and signed Craig Kimbrel, for example. I think that, you know, the urgency of Theo and of me and of ownership, I think it is fairly clear, you know, and I think that we have that urgency in the clubhouse as well. You know, the nature of baseball can be frustrating. You know, we had a poor stretch to start the season. We had a really remarkable stretch for a number of weeks where we played really, really good baseball. And then we've had this period now, 4 or 5 weeks, where we haven't. And, you know, sometimes we, you know, maybe, you know, we're always looking for answers within that, but sometimes that's the nature of the game. All that said, kind of going back to the beginning of this interview, we've got to play cleaner baseball. We've got to get back to winning series after series, and we have to do that. And there is urgency to do that. You know, we're not going to be impatient based on a middling month, and I think that would be misguided. But at the same time, you know, there is urgency to get back to playing the kind of clean baseball that we know we can play, and we've got to start winning series. We haven't done that. We just had a 10-game homestand, and we didn't win a single series. You know, that's not what we're looking for. So there's urgency, but there's also an understanding that it's a long season, and we've already shown we can do it. We just need to get back there, and I think the answers are in that clubhouse. And hopefully we start turning it around, you know, hopefully today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Broadcast.
This segment is brought to you by Arlington International Racecourse. They're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Friday's country night and Saturday's bacon, beer, and bloodies. Need they say more? Visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences. I know what you're thinking. What did you do with Lawrence Holmes? What happened? Where is he? I know that you're replaying an interview with Jed Hoyer. That makes sense. But why are you still here?
Yeah.
Well, Lawrence is out today. So we figured we just got nothing to do and nowhere to be. And no one in our lives cares enough about us for it to matter. So we figured we would just stick around here for a couple more hours and cover for Lawrence today for the old five-hour save. And that's fine because we'll lead you right up to McNeil and Parkins coming up at the top of the hour. And what you should know is that on August 5th, McNeil and Parkins are going to have their charity golf outing. Seven Bridges Golf Club is the place. So you can enjoy a day of golf with your friends, your favorite Score personalities, and local celebrities benefiting Turning Point Autism Foundation. Get your foursome before they sell out. So visit 670thescore.com/golfouting now. That's 670thescore.com/golfouting.
I have never played Seven Bridges. Have you played that track?
Played it? No.
I hear fished it, wonderful yes. things about that golf course. McNeil absolutely loves the place. I'm really hoping that by August 5th, my left hand is more than useless to me.
Yeah.
It's the cast, hopefully, comes off on the 2nd of July. That's what, Tuesday? Is that right? And then it's going to be rehab after that. I don't know if it's going to be smart for me to swing the sticks around on August 5th.
I would probably not.
Yeah, maybe I'll putt. Maybe I'll just go around and putt.
I believe it was a hawkism when he would describe that Seven Bridges bounce, right?
No, what's that?
What he would describe on the infield when a ball just came up right into the perfectly into the glove of
a fielder. A Sunday hop kind of thing. You know, Seven Bridges because it's perfect. It's perfectly manicured. Is that the idea?
Yes, I believe he always said that.
Makes sense
to
me.
Nice little Seven Bridges bounce.
Wondering if you wonder if you care about the home run derby at all these days.
No. Sometimes I turn it on because baseball is a home run derby now. Where
yes.
When the actual game, what's happened is that the relativity of it, it used to be, oh my goodness, look at this 500-foot home run, and
yep.
my God, how far can they hit when they really try? But what's happened is the home run itself, it's inflation. That you've changed the cost of money because you've printed so much of it, and they're just... Every day is home run derby now. Every day there's a 500-foot homer. Every day there's somebody winning another game with one. And it's all launch angle and getting the ball out in front of the
That's
plate.
That's true. I mean, it's not every day that there's a 500-foot home run.
No, but every day there's a 460.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're getting big distances off of some of these guys. But, Nomar Mazara knocks the 505-footer off Ronaldo Lopez. What was that, last week when the White Sox were in Texas? That thing was a monster.
Eloy Jimenez has had his share of 460s. I mean, the ball's...
home runs.
Every stadium, you've got a ball landing somewhere people haven't seen it land before, or people taunting somebody about hitting a ball in the ocean.
So the reason I ask is because baseball's best player doesn't seem to care all that much about it either, nor does he need to. Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim and Los Angeles and California, was talking to Mike Trout and apparently about the Home Run Derby. And Trout said that every year, Major League Baseball, I guess probably with the probably not counting his actual first season in the bigs when he played like 40-something games, something like that. Probably didn't ask him that year. But every year after that, they've asked him for the seventh consecutive season to take part in the Home Run Derby, and he has declined. It's kind of like LeBron not doing the dunk contest. Like, what does he have to gain in doing this Home Run Derby? And I don't know that it would work in other sports necessarily, just because of the level of interest that the Home Run Derby does or really, really doesn't have. Nobody seems to mind that Mike Trout isn't being put on display like this. I mean, everybody else, we spent all offseason when he had signed his contract and even before that talking about how baseball could market stars better. They could restructure
their off-seasons. Well, baseball blamed him.
That's the other thing.
Yeah, baseball put it on Trout and said, look, we can only do so much. A player has to want to market himself.
Well, I mean, he doesn't need the Home Run Derby to get marketed. He doesn't need that. But his teammate might. I would love to see Shohei Ohtani participate in the Home Run Derby. That would be, I think, a ton of fun.
I thought you were going to say Albert Pujols.
Well, Pujols has won one already, right? Or competed in 2015, but no, he didn't win. He nearly beat Jock Peterson that year. Jock Peterson won in that one. I would much rather see Shohei Ohtani. Or like these, there are players now who have statistical profiles, like the launch angle and the exit velo and stuff that aren't classically good players. They don't come with the 300 batting averages. They're the three true outcome guys.
Joey Gallo, that a lot Justin of people, Bohr.
That guy comes with a 1.1 OPS plus. I mean, he's fantastic. But you could look at these dudes who aren't classically good baseball players, the kind of guys that if you're just kind of in and out of the game a little bit and you were like a big fan in the 80s or the 90s or something like that, and then just kind of let it be background for a little while, now you could take these players and put them into these situations, put them into a home run derby or something like that, and show people the skill sets they do have and how they do fit into the modern game. It's just kind of an interesting
Kyle
way that you
Schwarber.
Could kind of, yeah, you could rephrase or reform a look at some of these players.
Yeah, I think it's a reach to set it up that way, to say, hey, look, it's okay to be this kind of guy in baseball in a way that it never was before. Then you call up Daniel Polka and you put him out there.
Well, baseball doesn't want to do that because they don't want to call attention to the fact that the home run is exploding out of the park the way it is anyway. Why? I don't really know.
Yeah, if they wanted to, they should have a hit away from the shift derby.
Well, see, I'd watch that too. Like, if you, I know you didn't play MVP baseball for it was EA Sports' title back in the mid 2000s. There were instead of playing home run derby, there were these like little mini games where you'd have a lawnmower that went from like right to left in the middle of the outfield that would go across. You'd have like little targets in the outfield in different places. You'd have targets over the fence in different spots.
Oh, I'm all for that.
And if you hit those targets, or if you hit to the one side of the field or the other, or like you'll have an obstacle or a goal,
it's
or
like
something
Mario
like that.
Mario Super Sluggers.
It's exactly like that. And it was awesome to play. And it'd be so much fun to watch because you'd have to see like different kind of skill sets for these guys exhibited live and immediately. Japanese baseball does this every once in a while. They've had like, you know, hit the opposite way or like pull it and hit this thing or knock down these targets.
Yes,
all that
I saw one where they set up targets in the infield all the way across to the chest.
And the
hitter in rapid fire, it was timed, had to knock out all the targets around either right to left or left to right, and just get it didn't have to be in order, but it had to be able to knock out each one of the targets and then a middle target at the end, which is like right at the pitcher's head.
Which would be awesome. Like, that'd be so cool to see something of a different setup. You don't need somebody yelling back, 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 gone every single time. You can do some sort of different challenge that allows, you know, just a different angle.
Yeah,
things.
I'm there for all of that and any of that. If you want to have little pop-up signs in the outfield, things to hit, if you want to integrate it and really just make it wild or do it, you could do it's like a fabulous relay where we used to do this
like a skills competition sort of thing.
We used to do this at overnight camp, and it was called the marathon. It was called the Green White Marathon, and all it was like this sort of mousetrap Goldbergian chain of events where one thing leads to the other, and
okay.
it involves everybody in camp, no matter what your skill is, no matter what you're good at. Even a kid who all he wants to do is whittle would have a job or crab walking. So what happens? It's two teams compete. And it begins with a sprint down and back. But once the sprint ends, then it's each team has to make a bed to proper standards. Everything folded. But it's all a race. Folded ideally. And then it says, okay, that's good. Go. And then a runner runs to archery. And an archer has to make X number of points.
I'm in on this.
And then a runner goes to riflery. And your shooter has got to make it. Then it's a swim race. And then from the swim point, canoeists come. And it's one event to the other. And it ends with building a fire to boil over a pot of water.
That'd be awesome.
That's when I burned my eyebrows off.
Well, you know, you're going to do that.
I was in charge. As I told you at Scorehouse, that's what I was doing when I burned my eyebrows off.
That's right.
But they added a twist. You have to carry a raw egg in a tennis ball container. And the egg can never break at any point. It has to be in the canoe.
Oh, that's
with the
relay stick?
That is essentially the relay stick. And if the egg breaks, you got to run back and get a new egg, and you lose time going to get the egg.
So you could have, you know, you'd split up your all-star teams.
Correct.
And
so
it's
pitcher's got to throw.
Run to first, and then the pitcher has to knock out some sort of target.
Yep, outfielder's got to throw it in a garbage can.
He's got, yep, and then somebody has to hit a home run.
And a runner, but they have to make it so, like, your runner can be a fat guy or a catcher or something. Like, you don't want you could use your little speedy guy as a runner, but you could invert everything. You could have an outfielder have to do the pitching, a pitcher have to get a hit. I mean,
that was always the best part of like track meets and stuff. When you do like the really big conference meets, you'd have the fat man's shuffle. You'd have the lifters or the throwers and stuff. You'd have the big guys who would also, they'd compete in their own relay. Well, not essentially a relay, not as though each one was event after event, but they'd throw discus and they'd put shot and then they'd go run the 100-yard dash. And that was the most watched event at any single high school track meet. It was the Fat Man Shuffle.
Yeah, I think you can do something like that where you connect all these events into one big race. And, I mean, of course, you could culminate it in the Home Run Derby.
Sure.
But you could add everything else to it, and you could even do it in multiple venues. You could have guys running through the parking lot. You could have guys doing a hot dog eating contest.
And then you win $1 million after it's all done, because why not? You've got the money.
I don't know if you saw this, but there is a Padres fan in England that is unintentionally trolling White Sox fans.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. An unintentional troll when we come back. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
The Scorecard.
The other advice is don't stand in front of a moving train.
Definitely don't do that.
The Bottom of the Hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the number 17 Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. We thank Rick Bucher, Hub Arkush, and Jonah Carey. We thank Brian Gertsch. We thank all the producers that were involved in two shows today. They were Jay Zawoski, Rick Camp, Ray Diaz, and Tony Gill.
Thank you, boys.
And thanks to everybody who participated in our little makeshift Friday Fung with sort of short notice there, doing Fails of July. Absolutely outstanding.
Solid work. We learned a lot of don'ts on the show today. Don't buy the Saturn V rocket.
Saturn missile pack.
Don't do that. Apparently, it'll send you through a plate glass window.
We think we're going to have some NBA stuff going over the weekend, so Mark Schanowski is going to be a big part of the show with all of his terrific thoughts and opinions on Monday, among other things. Certainly baseball as well. We will do transition with McNeil and Parkins for old time's sake. Keep it here. You got the score.
Let's get some cookies!
That does it for the extended dance mix of Bernstein and McKnight, the double album, The Lawrence Holmes Show, comes to a close. And I've stretched out enough to do the five, I think. How about you?
Yeah, I could pitch tomorrow. I'd be fine. I could go again.
You've done it before, yeah. And you'll do it again.
That's fine.
Sometime down the road. It's good to talk to you guys.
It's nice, really.
How are you?
There have been so few days over the past couple months when I drive in listening right now and say, man, I'd love to be there to talk with those guys about this or that. And here we are today. And a contribution to July Fails, if I may.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Did you hear this bit today, Speaks?
I did not. I'm excited to be in, though. And I think because you guys have now done 5 hours, you're eligible for the win. I think that math checks out.
And you know how important that is to me.
Sports radio wins still matter, man.
To you guys especially.
Sports radio wins.
I mean, I thought it was a quality show, and those count. If you count, if you accumulate a lot of quality shows, you're in good shape.
Eventually, you'll be fine.
There's a 70% correlation with business success.
Right, exactly.
Fireworks disasters, barbecues gone awry, that type of stuff being discussed today. And I don't know any of the participants. I know three guys I've met in my life, including a grandfather who lost an eye with fireworks.
Ooh.
But our story today comes from one of the great 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, where three 20-ish-year-old kids went fishing 4th of July weekend many years ago. This was a Darwin Award nominee, and unhappy with what they were catching. You've seen in so many movies the eating of the goldfish. Jonah Hill in Wolf of Wall Street.
Sure.
Yeah, he eats the goldfish. So this guy catches a 2-inch bluegill and decides to swallow it whole.
They have spines on the dorsal fin.
That dorsal fin of a 2-inch bluegill is razor sharp.
Oh troubles.
Yes. The esophagus slit. Yeah, he was.
The esophagus is important to several processes.
He was gurgling out blood, just blood gurgling out everywhere.
Right.
He bled out very, very quickly and passed away.
Oh.
And
I shouldn't laugh.
Can you, wait? You know, he eat a bluegill like that.
Wait,
you kind of deserve what you get.
You were there?
No, I wasn't there. I read this story.
Oh, you read it?
No,
okay.
I didn't know these. Right, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Mac strapped somebody down and fed them a 2-inch bluegill.
No, see, I was thinking, like, if you're looking for
an interesting way to kill somebody, but effective.
That scene got cut from Reservoir Dogs, I think.
Dr. No. It sounds like a Bond villain. And Mr. Bond, I want you to die. Swallow this. But the flow chart for should you swallow a live bluegill whole, I believe it starts with, are you a heron?
No.
And if the next one is no, it's don't.
Yeah. Right? I often thought how awful it had to be for that the guy's buddies to make that phone call to his parents.
I thought you were going
to
say the bluegill. I thought you were going to feel bad for the bluegill.
Well, they call the bluegill's parents, too.
Oh, yeah. When, the buddies to say, hey, yeah. Listen.
Look, Joe, we'd been drinking, you know, and we weren't catching much, and he thought it would be funny if he swallowed this little bitty bluegill whole. And, initially.
Hey, you got a minute time for a story? So, anyway.
Yeah. Doesn't matter what his name was. He's dead now. If anybody back in the studio could send an engineer down here, I'd love to visit with one of them during a break. This, you know, in this temporary studio, microphone levels are not monitored consistently. And when we have four microphones open, some microphones mm-hmm. need to be monitored a little different than others. Mm-hmm. So kindly take a stroll down here to our temporary studio.
Could I back off? If I back off of mine, would that be helpful?
It's fine. Mm. I think the processor takes care of a good percentage of it, but yeah, there's a little bit. With this, you know, they said only what, a month, which means at least two?
Please. At least two, I would guess. Have you strolled by the studios that are being constructed?
I have not.
So at least it seems to me, it's all of the ceiling work that needs to be done, the electrical that needs to be laid down, all the duct work and everything, and Dan and I were walking around there. That's the process, man. That's the guts. Those are the insides that have to be fixed up, and they're still working on
and
that.
Apparently, there's also a... There's issues between which union gets to do what and when. That there's apparently like the
election. Oh, Chicago in action.
The IBEW, like there's a certain place that one union can be up from here to here, uh-huh. but anything below this level they're not allowed to touch because that is the purview of a different union.
Right. I've offered to get trained on what's behind the console over there, and I can move a pot up and down if you just tell me which ones they are. I'd be happy to help engineer the show.
I can't. I want a contest. It's I don't not, know anything but, about that. I don't know anything about that. Don't ask me.
We all come up different ways, kid.
I have no idea.
Contest winner is a good way to come up.
The other thing Friday Fung did was it reminded me of an experience that I had completely forgotten. The guys kept talking about the Saturn missiles. Like, Saturn missile doesn't ring a bell.
You seen this?
And then I Googled.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Then I Googled it, it's a box of death.
Just got to secure them.
It's a box of danger.
Just keep them upright, and it'll be fine.
No, but you can't use your hand.
They still go in all different directions, completely unpredictable.
I can't remember the last time I had a box of missiles go awry. my missiles, 100% success rate on rocket missiles. Yeah. Those are easy.
Ours were
300 shots sometimes. You get the big bricks of them for 1,000 shots.
You would imagine that. The bigger one would probably be safer because the weight is going to keep it down. It's the little small ones that everyone's saying, like the box of, 15 or 20, we'll something
flip.
Like that. Those are going all over the place because they don't have the weight to hold it down.
I don't think they come in boxes that small. I think the first unit is like 100 of them, right?
Check YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a little 5x5, yeah. So it's 25, a little 25-er. Okay. And it is just death and destruction.
Okay, well, they're loud, they're fast, I enjoy the hell out of them.
We lit one off in the parking lot of a Native American reservation fireworks stand outside the Wolf River in Antigo, Wisconsin.
It's as good a place as any for it.
Might as well. We didn't want to take it home. We have it. Let's light them.
Is there anything more lame than a sparkler, by the way? I had a box of sparklers left over in the house, and Ruben was all over, Daddy, let's light sparklers. Come on. Let's do it. And so we lit one, and like 3.5 seconds in, okay, yeah, I'm done with sparklers. Right. Kid just didn't care anymore.
You write your name, and then it's done.
And look, you shake it fast enough, it looks like more area is lit than just this pencil thin portion.
And then it's done for the better part of a decade. Like, you don't.
You're done with it.
Yep. All right. The fun out of sparklers. Yeah, well, wow.
Not a lot available.
Once you've discovered, I don't know what age it is, what a smoke bomb in a coffee can does to a toad, sparklers just don't get it done anymore.
That is a joy, isn't it? Or bottle rocket war. Don't do this. Don't do this. But you could have a bottle rocket.
I'm going to answer for that. If there's an afterlife, I'm going to have to answer for that.
For the toad killing? That's what I'm sitting here thinking about.
Like, oh, yeah.
How did you not become a serial killer? Or did you? Am I unaware? But is, that's the beginnings of it, isn't it?
Cool. Supposed animals?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, no, that's second. Absolutely. That's second. Bedwetting is first.
Oh, that's not fair. My brother wet the bed until he was like 14.
Other people's beds, though. So it didn't count.
They did it from across the room. Right. So that,
that takes that skill. Yeah, they say bedwetting, fire starting, and cruelty to animals.
Gary Barnett, late teens on bedwetting. Just a little nugget.
See, there you go. There's
speaking,
a club.
Speaking of iPads.
Bob Spiegel and Gary Barnett hanging out together. I've told you, Mac, do you remember the contraption that my parents got for my brother? This is 1978, and he's still wetting the bed, so they got him something.
It was the $6 million man Oscar Goldman dryout kit.
It's close. It was a screen, a metal screen. It kind of looked like a window screen, and you put it between the sheet and the mattress, right? And it connected to a cassette player that was underneath the bed. And when he would wet the bed, it would the liquid would trigger something, which would start the cassette player, and a voice would get triggered going, "Wake up, you are wetting the bed. Wake up, you are wetting the bed.
I think it's better if it's like the 1812 Overture or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, you need to have some sort of ringtone for that.
Right. Yeah, well, it would be more fun if you could design your own, like, "Hey, jackass, go pee."
This is why your friends make fun of you.
You're going to smell bad at breakfast.
I just thought of something. I do have a nominee for something more lame than a sparkler.
Okay.
It's snakes.
It's that little black...
Oh, it's a snake.
The black disc. Right. You set it on the driveway, right. And you light it, and then you get a curly cue of ash.
It becomes a turd.
And everything smells like a fart.
Well, did you guys...
Let's do that again.
Maybe that was its original intention. It was supposed to represent a turd. It just didn't want to market it.
I made an ash turd.
Well, I don't know if you guys had these, so we had those, but you also had... It was like one of those shoved up inside a small cardboard tank, right?
Yes. With a Roman candle in the cannon.
No, not in the McKnight household. This was just the snake with the little plastic or cardboard tank. So you light the thing, and after you got done lighting the little, you know, whatever it was, the brown thing, and you're like, these suck or whatever. Your dad would be like, no, but wait, have you tried the tank?
Send in the car.
Put the tank down, and you light it, and the same thing happens, but the idea is the thing is supposed to propel the tank.
I was going
to
say the tank moves.
About an inch and a half.
Woohoo!
And then it's done. It doesn't set on fire. It doesn't explode. It doesn't
moves.
Do anything. And you're like, but isn't this better? And it's, no, Steve Z. No, this is not better, and this sucks. Why can't we have the cool fireworks like everybody else?
Conversely, they were cool then. They're still cool. The little white things that you throw on the ground, and they just snap.
Snaps? Yeah, what are they called? Snappers?
Something like that. Yeah. Snaps, maybe. But so, that's satisfying.
I don't know if you've ever played Robert Black Golf Course. It's a terrific public course in Chicago. It's sort of the home course that Jason and I play. And the ninth and final hole runs along Pratt Avenue, right behind Warren Park. And it's a beautiful day. We're having fun out there. A bunch of kids are walking down Pratt, and each one of them had to have an entire pack of snaps. And so you're standing at the tee, and it was you couldn't have written it. It's like you stop, and you kind of give the look, and the it's right there behind a fence, and they don't care. And I don't think it didn't look like they were doing it mindfully on purpose at all. Perhaps they were, but try doing that.
Yeah, every time you're in your backswing.
Try standing over the ball while that's going on.
Lovely. Yeah. Somebody want to punch out illegal? I don't have it in front of me.
We are Sports Radio 670 The Score, WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, a radio.com sports station. I was about to give you the legal from the Cubs Radio Network, which I did on Monday and Tuesday.
Awesome.
I had that legal memorized, but that's not what we're doing, so it wouldn't have made any sense at all.
And now a third engineer has joined the party, and he has brought a pair of headphones. That is the best way to check microphones. Mm. I would think put the headphones on and hear what it sounds like.
See?
News to me.
This is why radio veterans like you are helpful.
Where are we? What market are we in, guys? Put the headphones on to figure out which mic is hot and which one is.
Feels good to be here on the air in Buffalo. It really does.
Connor, big thumbs up to your birthday gift to Bernstein, man.
Oh, thank you.
I thought that was... Bugs. A big pile of bugs. That was thoughtful.
You got to do best advice I got. out on giving gifts is buy something for the guy that he likes but would never buy for himself. And I knew, like, he's not going to buy himself bugs, but he enjoys them and he got into it.
We talked about that during Scorehouse Week, and I forgot about it completely.
I logged it away.
Yeah,
that
was an excellent job. That's good friending right there. Yeah. That's being thoughtful.
It was really, you never know until years later what your best gifts have been. Like, the best thing my wife ever got me 20 years ago, got me this money clip. And this that I've had for, that's it. So for now, we don't really buy each other gifts anymore. But I just, look, if you can ever, ever duplicate this, it's a win.
Yeah.
And one of the best gifts she ever got, believe it or not, was when we got married, Mike and BB North gave her a Waterford crystal, a small Waterford crystal obelisk. And it is a place to set your rings before you go to sleep or before you shower. It's literally so you never lose your jewelry. It's a ring holder for your dresser. And we totally take it for granted. And I've just realized what an unbelievable gift that was. It's like you would never have thought to have bought yourself.
Never.
Right?
They throw the cool gifts at you.
It's really just very, that is nice. Very thoughtful
that
on
is
their
nice.
Part.
And he also bought you a mahogany conference room table, I believe.
And gave me $3 million.
Didn't end up being full value, but still, the thought was there.
Nice.
I took a little bit of a beating from some Cubs fans yesterday late in the show because I dared to mention Chris Bryant was 0-for-4 in yesterday's game and should have run out a foul pop that barely landed on the wrong side of the chalk, the foul side of the chalk. I don't think it's a narrative. I think it's what he's been doing late in ball games. He's had a bad month, and I had some numbers wrong yesterday. I'll get the right ones out there today. But when it matters most, late in ball games, he's failed this month.
It's not just this month.
The season.
Well,
it's
yeah,
not just this season.
He's got some
specifically
big...
in high leverage we're talking about.
Yeah,
the whole team. They've got a team of guys that struggle to remain themselves in leverage.
Why
but
is
it's
he
not
off
to
limits?
Say that they can't. But it's not. To
why
say
is he
that
off limits though? Because he won the MVP in a World Series a few years ago.
Because he hit in a World Series and drove in some big runs there. Schwarber did the same thing. I mean, It's I get it, and it's frustrating, and there are no sacred cow. I get that. There really shouldn't be, and everybody's open to criticism, even the guy who won you an MVP. But even still, like, it's just clumping this sample size of runners in scoring position and then going, well, then they can't hit. Yes, it's an issue, but I don't think it's guys shriveling up. I don't think it's people receding into the chest cavity here.
To me, Bryant and Schwarber are the emblems of modern baseball philosophy in terms of, all right, we found our gorgeous fly ball guys. We found our fly ball rate guys. Now let's bring in a variety of hitting coaches and try to get this message across to them so they completely change in certain situations and hit down on the baseball and place it where the shift is not, et cetera. That's not who they are. They try to then become both, which Anthony Rizzo is capable of being. But Bryant is out there looking to drive the ball. And he had that first pitch double play, the 5-3 double play. That was Tuesday night, I believe, and then there was another
Wednesday night. Yes,
Wednesday night. I think whatever.
Which, yeah, you're right.
I think it was Tuesday night.
Yeah, because Parkins and I talked about it Wednesday.
Yeah,
you're right.
and then there was another first pitch double play along the way here. But so he's trying to find the fastball and blast it and ambush. But it's like it's just freaking hard. It's hard to ask guys with that perfect home run stroke to also be this other thing. And in certain situations, if the math just ends up piling up bad, it piles up bad. I don't think he's turtling.
I think it's also hard what we now know about situational matchups and pitchers who have every bit of video and every bit of picture of your swing and their grip and specialists coming in to face you in the most important times from the fifth inning on. It's not just the eighth and ninth. Because of the understanding of leverage, you may get through. You may see the starter once, twice, however the game unfolds.
And the starter is better versed than ever before on how to go after you, too. They all are, based on specific things. Like, or this is where his swing plane is, so stay away from there. It's the kind of stuff that never got talked about.
And now everybody can know everything, yet we watch the Dodgers and the Astros, Red Sox a little bit, too. You got some teams that are still better at it than everybody else.
Oh, they're deeper with it than everybody else. I mean, to me, Spiegs, when you mention matching hitting coaches to swings that don't quite fit and trying to, square peg round hole.
Yeah.
To me, it's more about the rest of the lineup, too, that needs to happen. Like, you're right. Chili probably should have never spoken to Ian Happ about anything. Like, that's Probably didn't need to happen.
It's like when everybody talked to Gavin Floyd. But remember how bad that went?
Yes.
Don't stop talking to Gavin.
Get out of his
way.
But
that's the thing. It's like, you know, now if we're going to have these swings, you need to surround some of those swings with the other kinds too. That's why not having
Zobrist.
Ben Zobrist being Ben Zobrist has kind of hurt this thing. Because instead of a dude on second base after a nice little double to the gap, it's nobody.
How seriously should I take that Hoyer quote, which I read and did not hear from your guys' show, about that they might go out and make a move for offense? They might go out and do something for offense? That sounded like trading something of consequence for something else of consequence to shake up the lineup mix.
Or something you once thought was of consequence.
Well, they would have done that. If they could get a lefty reliever for Addison, it would have happened.
Yeah, I think they want the phone to ring. I think they're happy to have some of these conversations. I'll tell you what changes the discussion is when Jason Hayward is doing what he's doing. You forget what a difference that really makes. I mean, his last few weeks have really been something.
What team who's near contention or trying to push closer to it is calling and saying, I've got to have Addison Russell? No, seriously. I mean, it's
a team that wants an elite middle infield glove.
That team probably already has the middle infield glove that's good enough, and that dude probably hits a little better than Addison Russell. You know, I think it's where they're at on the trade market. Nobody's calling and saying, you know what's going to solidify my squad for the next 5 years as the rest of these pieces come up and around is Addison Russell.
Not to mention inflame my fan base for a news cycle and a half at a minimum.
Yeah, no question. You guys have a great weekend, all right?
You too.
You pitched 10 innings today, so go have a beverage. Go have a single malt scotch and eat some bugs, Bernstein.
That sounds like an invite that I'm going to accept. Have a great show, guys.
See you later.
All right, boys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.